From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 349, recorded live Thursday, December 6th, 2012. This episode is brought to you by Telerik, offering the best in developer tools and support. Online at TELERIK.com. And by Franklins.net, training developers to work smarter. And now offering GesturePack, a powerful gesture recording and recognition system for Microsoft Kinect for Windows developers. Details at GesturePak.com. In this episode of Hansel Minutia, Scott talks with Richard Campbell about all things automatable.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. In fact, another episode of Hansel Minutia with our very own Richard Campbell. How are you, sir?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm lovely. Thank you for hanging out, as so, always.
People is this what demand. The 11th one or 12th one? It's crazy.
Oh, something like it. People demand the minutia. They love it.
The joke, of course, is it's just the conversation we would have anyway.
Right. This is just basically us hanging out in a hotel lobby.
Yep.
Except we record it.
Yeah, that's all.
Yeah. And this is a part...
Maybe a little bit of organization. That's all.
Yeah, exactly. There's a little bit of structure, but... I have heard both the incredibly positive about these shows and also the these are the shows that I avoid.
Right.
So the feedback is never in the middle.
No.
It's never, eh. It's always like, oh, man, Richard, click.
Yeah. It's like the two of us together are a polarizing agent because independently, apparently, we're not. We're some kind of weird chemical reaction. I don't know what that means.
Some kind of an alkaline acid thing going on here. So you're like, you know, this is funny because we're not too much of the different ages. I was just going to say you're like a father figure to me.
That's weird.
But you're like 2 years older.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that counts. But whenever I do something very gadgety or very automated or any kind of home automation, I always like want your approval. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know, like I hooked up the Nest thermostat. I'm like, ah, and I wrote it up on the blog. I'm like, ah, Richard would be very proud of me.
Yeah.
Because you're the only person I know who, when you call your house, the phone system actually says, press one for Richard.
Oh, no. I got rid of the 1, 2, 3. You have to say the name now, and I don't give you the names in advance. That's the end of telephone solicitors. If you do not know who you're calling my house and you can't say their name, bye-bye.
Really? So now it says, say the name of the person you want to see?
Exactly. Who would you like to speak to?
Oh, that's awesome. So no one bad calls you anymore.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know there was telephone solicitors till I got a regular, you know, in some other house with a telephone line. Because the automated systems that just barf at us. They don't know what to do.
That's epic. Because, you know, frankly, I didn't like the press one thing.
Yeah.
No, it was a little impersonal.
You just say the name.
Yeah, yeah. That's amazing. I hooked up another thing recently. I finally got my backup game after 10 years of trying to get my backup game straight.
Yeah.
I think I'm pretty much got a system that works now. I've got the NAS, the Synology NAS, Network Attached Storage Box.
Okay.
And I've got it hooked up with CrashPlan. Do you ever use CrashPlan?
No, not heard of CrashPlan.
What do you use for your cloud storage?
I've got a couple of different segments of data because I have a bunch of different roles that I'm working in, but I'm mostly just pushing to stuff like SkyDrive and Box and so forth. And I've got, you know, tools that push up to that. So personal stuff like photos and things is being pushed over to Dropbox, and work-related ones are pushed onto work-related services. It's a mix. Honest to goodness, Scott, getting back from the road trip, and I just opened up the rack, and I'm looking at it, and I'm going, how much longer am I going to put up with this? I'm just about at the end of the road to just go, it's all cloud all the time. You know, I use the line, and I'm still running my own Exchange server because I like to be afraid, but I think I've just about had enough.
There's no reason for you to run your own Exchange server. That's just crazy talk.
And we finally got all of the PWAP properties, .NET Rocks and so forth, are all in Azure now. So I think
that is true.
If we're up there, goodness knows I should be up there.
Yeah, it's funny. I've had a bunch of computer crashes and stuff lately, and installing Windows and getting back up and going just isn't as hard anymore.
No, it really
isn't. It's basically, I install Windows, install SkyDrive, install Dropbox, install Google Drive, and then I'm pretty much back going.
Yeah, bap, 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 bap. So which of the Synology devices do you have? Because there's a bunch of them.
Yeah, there's a bunch. And the thing with Synology is that there are ARM devices and there are Intel devices.
Oh, really?
And the ARM devices are cheap and back stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
the Intel devices are effectively the home server that home server was.
That used to be.
Right.
Home server isn't.
If you're serious, you've got to get the Intel. So I have the Synology 1511 Plus, and it is a little black box with five bays. And, you know, I've been very, very happy with it. So right. I've got four 2 terabyte drives in the Synology.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 8 terabytes. And then using their RAID thing, it gives me about 5 terabytes, 5.2.
And it looks like the 1511 has been upgraded now to the 1512 plus.
Right. And I think that I've got 3 gigs in mind. So I've upgraded the RAM myself. But I believe that the processor in the 1512 is better now.
Right.
So when I first got this, I figured that it was just a, you know, a nice solid NAS and it'd be fine. And, you know, I'm not a Linux guy, but I can, you know, I can run top. That's mm-hmm. basically all I need to be able to do. And I kind of forgot about it. And my Synology has run in my house happily, just basically being / server for a number of years. Then I said, you know, I don't have a good cloud backup strategy mm-hmm. for the family. I have Dropbox. And I have paid for Dropbox, and I also have done a lot of referral codes with Dropbox. So I have 135 gigs available in Dropbox,
mm-hmm.
but only about 60 used. So just not a lot. Basically, every presentation I've ever given, all my presentations, folders, and stuff like that. So if I'm, you know, I find myself in a foreign country with a laptop and a decent connection, I can basically talk to you about anything because all my PowerPoints are there.
Right.
But the family photos, and I've actually got a blog post about this I'll put in the show notes, that have gotten bigger and bigger and bigger each year are, you know, probably 110, 120 gigabytes.
Yeah. And they're only there. That's the one piece I fear for the most.
Exactly.
Because I don't have them anywhere else.
This psychic weight was pressing on me. And I've tried Mosey, and I find, you know, I know you're not supposed to judge a book by its cover, but Mosey.com, M-O-Z-Y, mm-hmm. their website is just like frozen in time, like a bug in amber. And it makes me feel like no one cares about their product.
Yeah.
And they're not interested in their product being successful. So I've just stopped using Mosey and stopped caring. So I looked around, and there's Backblaze, and there's CrashPlan, and there's S3. Yada, yada, yada. I picked CrashPlan. CrashPlan mm-hmm. is really clever. So it's cloud backup, which is fine, but it's also distributed friend backup. So if you and I are good friends and we don't want to pay for CrashPlan in the sky or we don't trust them,
right.
I can back up your stuff and you can back up my stuff.
Interesting.
So it's peer-to-peer. But it's also got this strange client-server thing. You run the client and the server on the same machine, so mm-hmm. it doesn't feel like client server. But the trick with running it on a NAS is you install the server on the NAS, and it's headless, totally headless. There's no UI. Then you install the client on any machine you have available, go into the config files, and then point it over to that server. So then you're looking at the settings on that remote. So I'm mm-hmm. sitting here on my Windows machine. I'm looking at the CrashPlan app. And then when I hit add files, I am looking at the file system on that remote machine.
Nice.
Makes sense?
Yeah.
Totally headless. And I wrote it all up on how to do this. There's a guy who made a package. And this got me into the Synology packaging community. There are packages for everything. You know, like if you want an app that will go off and find album artwork for your iTunes music
mm-hmm.
and make sure it's in your Synology. They've got those packages. And so far, I've backed up 180 gigs to CrashPlan. Been absolutely thrilled with them.
Mm-hmm.
It took about 2 weeks, but now it's just doing its thing. And it's just nice to just look at that and see, well, look, the photos are backed up. So now I add that with my iFi. You know about the iFi? The little Wi-Fi SD card?
Yep.
Oh, it's glorious.
Amazing thing.
My wife would take photographs, and then they would never get put anywhere.
Right.
Now, she just comes home, turns the camera on. It automatically uploads into /server/photo/2012. Shows up automatically in her pictures, because I've added that to the library in Windows. So, from her perspective, she sits down, turns the camera on, photos start flying in.
Right.
It's automatically showing up on the server, which, by the way, I've redirected her My Documents folder to.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't know that. That's the best part, right? You know, right. And that's all backed up to the crash plan.
Nice.
So I've got kind of working directory is Dropbox. Long-term trusted storage is crash plan. And then I have an off-site backup where I basically rotate two physical spinning Rust disks back and forth between the bank and the house. Backup A and backup B.
And I'm one of these people that always dumps my camera. But
oh yeah,
I know people literally with several years of photos on their camera.
Oh God, that's just...
It's terrifying.
You're asking for trouble if you do that.
And I don't know about you, but I fry an SD or a CF, I don't know, twice a year. It's mostly from flying, right? Most of the time, I also kill a phone a year. But, when you're flying in the 250,000-mile-a-year range, you come off airplanes routinely with stuff not working anymore. Right?
Oh, yeah.
The SD's just gone. And I just can't imagine it. You got 3 years worth of photos on a CF in your SLR, and you get off an airplane and it's gone.
It's funny that you mentioned that because I've got like a users folder. So there's users Scott and users Mo. And I noticed so much that relatives were doing this. Mm-hmm. My sister-in-law, like every photo she's ever had has been on the same card, on the same camera.
Right.
Since she bought it. So I just got in the habit of making folders for anyone who visited the house.
Right.
So any relative who visits the house, I'm just like, hey, can I just take your computer for a second and back it up?
Yeah.
And I back it up for them. And then, I do it with their permission, of course.
Yeah.
But I just feel better. Like, I don't know about whether they feel better, but,
it's like,
I just feel better knowing right. that when the computer inevitably dies.
Yes. And they phone you, which is also inevitable.
Oh, yeah. I have a backup from 2008. It's better than nothing. It's not ideal, but at least I got your stuff.
I got something.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, now I have I put together a streaming peer-to-peer backup with my mother, who continues to write novels.
Mm-hmm.
And it's exactly that. And one day her machine just punted. And I was, 2 hours behind.
Mm-hmm.
So, that just assembling something like that for the folks who just really don't think about it, never are going to think about it.
Yeah. Oh. Speaking of being just a few hours behind. So I recently discovered a new feature of Windows 8. Are you on Windows 8?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know about storage spaces?
Yep.
Oh, dude, you should have told me.
It's on my list for Christmas. I do for Christmas is build new hardware, and I'm building out a new dedicated storage spaces machine.
Yeah, well, I just had these 2 3-terabyte external USB 3 Seagates. They were on sale.
Yep.
And I bought a cheap but reliable USB 3 hub, and I'm all about USB 3 now. It's a glorious, glorious thing. And then hooked up the storage space. It's basically what they gave you in Windows Home Server.
Right.
Right? It's a sparse RAID.
Yep. And also, but a natural growing one, too. It's not all that tightly fitted. The fact that you take an existing RAID array and you say, I want to make this bigger, that is not easy to do in traditional RAID. But
exactly.
This
exactly.
model, the storage space model, is just like, sure, why not? Add some more.
And I hooked up what do I have? I have a 5-terabyte two-way mirror. But I think I have 10 terabytes is the size of it, right?
Right.
So it is bigger than I have storage for. How does that work?
I love those physics.
It's thinly provisioned, they call it. Basically, it's like, I know that one day you wish that you were 10 terabytes.
Yeah.
So I'll just pretend that you are until you are.
And I'll let you know when you need some more to make it closer to true. I have a true 10 terabyte array. And it is almost full. It's at 700 gigs to go. And so that's why this Christmas I'm provisioning the new machine and now Western Digital's making 4-tera drives.
Yeah.
So, I buy a 6-pack of those and let's go.
Yeah, exactly. I have found that the UI has some limitations of storage spaces so that if you are a power user, you will find yourself using PowerShell occasionally.
Yep.
I found that I wanted to remove a drive and upgrade to another drive. And it turns out that it does not automatically rebalance.
No.
But there are PowerShell commands you can use to rebalance.
Yeah, and it is V1. It is clearly a V1 product. Like the SP1 of Server 2012, expect good things because it's just stuff that didn't make the cut.
So check this out. I took storage space, right? And that's my F drive. So I have basically, you know, these two big drives and they're mirrored and they're on USB 3. And I did two things with them that I'm rather proud of. First, I hooked up GM Vault, which is Gmail backup.
Yep.
So I am backing up my Gmail now reliably.
Locally, too. Right?
Locally. Yeah, and okay. They're just .email files, so you can double-click on them and open them. They're just
love
text
that.
Files.
Well, and it gets back to this whole, hey, Gmail's got my mail, and if I ever get away for any reason, I'm hooped. Mm-hmm. So just,
exactly.
I like to own a copy of my stuff.
So I have 300,000 emails for the last many, many, many years there.
Mm-hmm.
Then I hooked up file history, and file history is like Time Machine for Windows 8. But one of the things that I didn't realize about file history until recently, and I actually surprisingly, if you're on storage spaces in Windows 8, you just hit Window W, type in storage, go to storage spaces. In the lower left-hand corner, it says see also file history.
Mm-hmm.
This is basically taking a snapshot of all the stuff that I'm doing every hour. But if you go to advanced settings, you can say recommend this drive. You know about this? Come on,
no.
Tell me there's something that I... Oh, finally.
What is that?
Something I know that you don't know.
Recommend this drive. This is nutty.
So you go and say advanced settings, and this is where you say save copies every hour, take up this much space, keep versions forever. If the PC is part of a home group, just recommend the drive. So now when I go into file history for the first time on any machine in the house,
right,
it says, oh, use this one. So my big machine in the office is recommending the file history to all the other machines. So now when I go into file history, I can see Scott and Mo and all the machines in the house. And when I brought in a new Windows 8 touchscreen laptop yesterday, I just added it to the home group, which is just instant. I didn't even need a password for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said, oh, file history, click, boom. And they all go to the same central location.
So you know what it strikes me? You realize many years ago, like literally 1998, I set up NT4 domains in the house, anticipating that I was going to need to use group policy to manage my kids' access to the machines and so forth. And I've maintained that ever since. And we're finally in a place where I feel like I could tear all that out.
Yeah,
I don't need to run a domain in my house anymore.
Yeah, home groups are definitely useful.
They're smart enough.
My parents recently moved and hooked up into a rental for a little while, and I wanted to make it so, you know, dad could print to mom's printer.
Right.
So the obvious thing is go to the printer and hit sharing and then share it and then figure out the name of mom's machine, yada, yada, yada. But I wanted to see what it was like in the home group world.
Yep.
So I went to home group. I said, make a home group, joined it, and then without even asking, the printer showed up on dad's machine. Like, it became his default printer because that was the obvious first thing to do.
Right.
And I said, okay, here we go. Now we've achieved something.
Well, now you don't need to go out and specifically buy a network printer and deal with all of that either. It's just every device on every machine is effectively a shareable device.
Exactly, exactly. And I'm kind of surprised that while the local storage with the file history and storage spaces is great, the one thing that I have been very happy with and been very reliant on is this Synology, this Linux NAS.
Mm-hmm.
Because like I say, all I want is a NAS that is headless, that I don't have to think about, that has a great ecosystem behind it. And that's what Windows Home Server was.
Yeah.
And, you know, it still exists, but the removal of their RAID solution just...
Yeah, the storage thing was the big thing.
Yeah.
And you realize they did that because storage spaces was coming and they just, you know, really... I don't think they've gotten back to reorganizing what home server should be. But in the meantime, I think the market's been picked up by folks who are just like, hey, let's focus on the main thing here, which is something you can run at your home that just works.
Yeah. The UI for the Synology is really interesting. It's all web-based and it's all HTML. But you would swear you're running an operating system.
Hmm.
Like it has window management and, you know, I just go HTTP, whack, whack server. I log in. I'm actually doing it right now. And I have windows and I have Explorer type things and I have package managers. It's all in the browser. It's just nuts. It is like you have VNC'd in, but it's all done in HTML.
Interesting.
And when I go to the package center here, I'm clicking on package center, and I can say, what are some available packages? You've got a music server, an iTunes server, and I downloaded a thing called Plex. Are you familiar with Plex?
I am, yes. And I'm not using it internally, but I have friends who are huge fans. Like, that's the thing.
I got to meet these people because I am blown away by Plex. It is a, what's it called? DNLA? You know, it's a UPnP media server. It's mm-hmm. a universal plug and play, dynamic, blah, 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 blah. I don't know what DNLA stands for.
But out to your phones, out to all your devices. It's just amazing how it's just,
right.
It's getting closer to what we actually wanted.
Right, exactly. In a nutshell, I put a file in a folder, and suddenly it, if it's a movie, it'll get album art, you know, it'll get movie art.
Mm-hmm.
It'll become available, but it's the transcoding. And this is why I said earlier, you need to have an Intel machine. I can sit in bed with my iPad, run the Plex application, and it will say, oh, you're on Wi-Fi, you're on an iPad. I will transcode, dynamically, you know, change the compression and ratio of this file so that you can watch this effectively on your phone or on your iPad.
When it's one of those things where you never think about that until it doesn't work.
Oh, yeah.
Right? The fact that you have all these shows in all these formats and your devices don't all speak to that.
Right, exactly.
So you're saying the transcode is happening on the Synology device.
Exactly.
So it needs some horsepower.
It has the horsepower, right, exactly. And that's why you got to get the Intel one. But they've also got Mono running on the Synology. People can run, Git or Subversion on mm-hmm. it. A number of people, because the Synology really likes to be exposed to the outside world, you can run Asterisk, which would be like a VoIP server.
Yeah, it's a phone system. It's one of the ones I seriously considered before I put mine in.
Yeah, yeah. And what also, you know, cloud servers, PHPBB, you know, Drupal, things like that. So mm-hmm. one could not only just have it be a business server, but it could run their website if they wanted to.
Yeah.
But the best part was what I just discovered, that the Synology comes with a full-featured surveillance station.
Hmm. And this is actually a separate product name, this surveillance station, but any of the devices seem to be able to run it, although it seems like it's licensed differently.
Right. Yeah. So that is the one thing that sucks, that you have to basically pay for a license to run a camera. And it's like the cameras that you see at like 7-Eleven or Plaid Pantry, one of these little 24-hour shops where mm-hmm. you get like a split screen. But it works with any IP-based camera. So I went and bought a bunch of Foscam, F-O-S-C-A-M cameras. They're all these wireless $60 Wi-Fi cameras.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've got a couple in the house and a couple outside. They're known for their IR support. So you've got like this bright, you know, infrared LED array.
Right.
So you could see the whole backyard in pitch black. But what's nice is that the SAN has the power to run this 24 hours a day. And it will do motion detection. So right now I'm looking at it. It's using about 3-4% of the CPU.
Mm-hmm.
Right now it's 7%, 5%. And it is recording from all four of these cameras. And then I can go and TiVo them. So if, for example, there is motion detection in the front, I can find out, oh, these kids are trying to egg my car or whatever.
Right. And it's primarily bears in the backyard.
Yeah, it's funny how we have some, you know, the whole kind of Canadian U.S. thing. I'm worried about kids destroying my vehicle and you are worried about bears.
Yeah, well, it turns out bears fairly destructive. And I have great videos of a pair of raccoons stealing, I think somebody put a pumpkin pie on the back deck to cool. So I have the video clip of the raccoons coming up very cautiously, looking around, and then hearing a noise and running away, and then sneaking back up again, and then grabbing the pie and taking off with it.
That is a uniquely Canadian thing. Like a pie on the back... On the back porch to cool.
Yep.
Like, I don't think that's happened in the U.S. for 50 years.
Yeah, well, we still cool stuff.
You guys
on the
are living
deck.
The dream up there.
Well, you should come up.
I should come up.
But, you know, my camera system, which is hardwired into the house, I did not use IP cams, but when we were building the house, we had a chance to put the wiring in for it, has a dedicated piece of hardware that does all those things. So, I mean, I put that together a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's just an integrated... What I love is you're buying good cameras from a good camera maker, and you're using great software from a completely different supplier for these capabilities. That's a fairly profound thing. Does the pan-tilt-zoom stuff work through the Synology device?
That's actually great that you mentioned that. So what the other thing that the Synology has is a lot of little apps. So I can look at this from basically it's a clearinghouse, right?
Right.
So like I've got a Foscam brand camera, but I've also got a Panasonic and a couple of other cameras I've had lying around. They all have different, interfaces. Some are MPEG-4, some are MJPEG.
Mm-hmm.
They all do pan, tilt, zoom differently. I think that what they're charging you for is the effort that it took them to come up with a centralized API for all of this.
Yeah.
So it makes them all look like they are equals.
Yeah, they built an ODBC for IP cams.
Yes, well said. Very well said. So that's allowing me to do pan, tilt, zoom with the exact same UI. I just click and start moving around. And then you can make patrol structures. So I could go and say, I want the one in the front to move itself around and patrol the area at 3 a.m.,
mm-hmm.
which is super cool.
Yeah. I've had the motion sensing experience with the coyotes cutting across the yard, chasing after some poor critter. And, you know, it's mostly wildlife tracking. Well, and seeing when the mailman arrives and what the dog's barking at. And
the mailman arriving actually these are all first world problems, of course.
Yeah.
But, super, super useful.
Yeah.
No, especially, you know, if you're arguing about like, well, yeah, I've dropped it off. I've actually had the guy drop it off at the neighbors and swear that it was at my house.
Yes. No, and I've had the UPS guy, I've had the UPS email saying could not deliver today. And I've just run back the camera and said, never came to my house today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. He's like, yeah, he got tired. So he just marked it as a could not deliver and went home.
Let's go to the tape.
Yeah, let's just run that back. Well, actually, I had an argument. There was an argument with a neighbor involving, you know, left a car in front of my house for 4 hours. And it turns out I have a camera right there that could see in front of your house. Let's just see how long that was actually there.
Really? Yeah. Didn't you feel kind of jerky by...
No, you know, people are used to my geekiness. It wasn't my car. It was somebody else. It was just, you know, trying to descale... Cut down the hyperbole on an argument.
I see. So you were like, it's been in the house for 4 hours. And like, nonsense. It's 20 minutes.
Yeah. Let's just run it back. It was less than an hour, you know.
I see.
Not that big a deal. But it's all, you know, there's also this when you get this, you know, it's you. No, it's me. It's well, I have actual empirical data. Shall we go look at it? Oh, wait. Let's just resolve this. I could do that.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is funny. It'll be interesting to see how much of a difference it makes just to have cameras up.
Yep.
Whether they're on or not. I guess that's why people sell fake cameras.
Yeah. Well, and I've also done stuff like, did I take the garbage out? Can't remember. Well, there's a camera inside the garage. And I go, look, oh, the cans are all up. That's good.
Yes.
You know, that just one less reason to go upstairs.
Yeah, exactly. I told you about the twine that I hooked up on the garage.
Yeah, and what a great gizmo that is.
Yeah, too expensive, but super fun.
Yeah.
It actually just texted me just a few minutes ago that the garage is open. My wife knew that we were recording.
Right.
And did not close the garage thoughtfully.
Oh.
Because she wanted to make the sound.
Right.
And so now I need to go and close that, actually.
So what did it take to detect that your garage was open with twine?
So it turns out that it knows about orientation.
Mm-hmm.
So all you need to do is say if it's on its back for more than 5 minutes,
then it's because it's mounted on the door itself. So when the door is up,
it is gaffer taped.
Right. Nice.
So the door is up. Yeah, and that's all it is. I mean, it could be whatever I wanted to use it.
Yeah,
I could use it for a number of things.
I have a roller door. Wouldn't work for me that way anyway.
You're saying that the whole thing is...
The door rolls up. You can't swing back because there's a lift in the garage that goes up. There's no room for the door to go back.
Oh, that's a tough one.
Yeah, have to do it a different way. I do it by having a camera in the back of the room, and if I look and it can see into the driveway, I know the door's open.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I think when the twine is like $20... Or, you know, $15 and you can buy a six pack of them.
Back to this whole Internet of Things mindset that we just want to be able to instrument everything.
Well, yeah, there was a time there when everyone said that there would be an Internet of Things and there wasn't. We were running out of IP addresses. And then now, you know, internal IP addresses are easy and IPv6 has happened. I don't think we were worried about running out of, this stuff anymore.
No, I think we have all the ingredients. It's just, like you said, it's stuff like twine actually getting the price into the right place to that anything that isn't already got an IP address can have an address added to it, which is essentially what we're doing.
Exactly.
Right? And then instrumenting the device. I do think we're in an interesting place where between Arduino and the and Twine and all these different kinds of devices, general purpose devices are now getting cheaper than the custom built hardware in most appliances.
Mm-hmm.
Like for the price of an Arduino, you've got so much horsepower there. You could run a dishwasher off of that. And I think the Arduino chipset's actually cheaper than the custom built gear that the dishwasher manufacturer has to deal with to try and program it.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that. I wonder why so many of these companies insist on making custom hardware when they really just could throw something like a Raspberry Pi or something like that in there.
Exactly. And I think we're getting there. Like that, I think, feel like is imminent, that we've made enough of these things now. We've got the price to a point, and there's so many more features that you're talking about every appliance being hackable and every appliance being instrumentable.
And that's how it should be.
Yeah. And now we start getting into, if we're going to really talk about that, again, that Internet of Things, the being able to do power monitoring down to the individual device, being able to remotely control everything, you know, basically having this truly smart house. My house is not that smart. It's reasonably bright. It's brighter than most, but it's nowhere near where it could be.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the feeling of being empowered to do this kind of stuff. Like I realize it's totally wacky and fun that we're doing this, but you know, and again, you know, I keep using the term first world problems in the sense of, you know, it is not on the high on my list of things. Do I need to set up an alert that the garage door is open? But it's just so fun that I can.
Well, and it's also for me, the big gauge is, will the wife use it? Is it reliable enough? Is it important enough? Will she complain when it doesn't work?
Yes, spouse acceptance factor.
Absolutely. And yet not just to tolerate it being present, but that she actually uses it. Like the camera system, she uses that. She's aware of that. The media PC, now accepted. If it isn't working, I hear complaints. The Xbox, still no, right? I got the Kinect working with Netflix and showed her how to use it. She watched a couple of shows, never been back to it.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So, you know, that one hasn't stuck yet. But that's, you know, effective gauge for me is, you know, has this stuff really matured enough that someone who doesn't like its geekiness sees still as useful and cares when it doesn't work? You know, that's my measure.
Yeah. I think that I'm working on the getting the Plex thing in my wife's mind. Mm-hmm. Like, if I can put something on Plex, give her the iPad, she can go upstairs and then just find it with two clicks.
Yeah.
She will start using it. She's not quite there yet because it's not intuitive to have to run an app at all.
Yeah, I think I may have to go to the Plex Plus because She Who Must Be Obeyed has an iPad also, originally for curling because there's a great curling app on it.
Yeah.
But she's always complained about wanting to. We pretty much narrowed ourselves down to one big TV in the house down in the rec room, and there's one in the kitchen. She doesn't want to just watch shows there, but she could certainly watch them in bed on the iPad.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
I think that's where we need to get to.
Cool. Well, thanks for chatting with me today, Richard.
It sounds like it was the home automation show today.
It is the home automation show. It's always fun to talk about this stuff.
You bet.
Very cool. Well, this has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.